this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey, everybody. We have a real, actually two treats, three treats, really, this time as we come on with you here for Y'allitics. First treat is Jason Whiteley couldn't be here this time, and that's just a treat every now and then. You know, sometimes you need a break. He probably needed one, too, so it's just Wheeler this time. Our second treat is our guest today, who we've had on the program several times before, but we've never had you in person. This is Ed Herz. He is the Energy Fellow at the University of Houston. It's so great to be in person with you, Ed.
Well, now you know it's just not an AI generation.
Yeah, we see you in 3D here. And then the third treat is that we are at Milo Butterfingers in Dallas, which is a really cool old bar that has been here for eons. And Ed, I'm going to put you on the spot with some movie trivia here. Do you know what movie was shot here, if you look around in here?
There you go, but it's R. I'm not sure.
No,
Ed's drawing a blank. It was Born on the 4th of July, Oliver Stone movie with Tom Cruise, and I'm one of these terrible people who has not seen that movie. I think I'm like the last one who hasn't seen it. At any rate, he says,
Does it make sense now? Yeah, it does, but yes.
They shot several scenes in here, and I was speaking with the guy who runs the place, and he says that, you know, they got a call one day, and they said, yeah, we're thinking of shooting this movie there with Tom Cruise, whatever. He's like, yeah, okay, sure. You know, he hangs up. A week later, he's sitting at a table here, looks up, and he thinks, that looks just like Tom Cruise had just walked through the door. And it was Tom Cruise and Oliver Stone, he says, and they took a look around, took like two steps inside. Before anybody could say anything to them, they were out of here. But then not long after, they were back and they shot several scenes of the movie in this bar. They wanted something that looked like 1960s era Long Island with the wood paneled walls and all of that. And this was it.
This would be it.
So this is it. So we've got some cool history. We're in a good place. And we're talking about, first of all, we're having some Texas beers here. Both of
Cheers.
Us doing a Shiner this time around. But to celebrate the fact that we're actually in person. And of all the places to actually meet up with you in person, Ed, we are in the shadows of SMU, Southern Methodist University here in Dallas. You are, you know, an icon there at the University of Houston. I graduated from the University of Houston, and here we are, you know, right outside SMU practically for our first meeting.
Yeah, Big D is home to a lot of Texans. We can be here too.
Yeah, I guess it's okay. We'll make the exception here. So, you know, we got a lot to get into this time around, and I think that one of the huge things that's on a lot of people's minds is something that we've talked about many times before, and that is, as we go into a summer here, do the lights... more importantly, does the AC stay on? Are we going to have issues with that again? And we've seen some, you know, early signs that, you know, we're still in the thick of having to watch on a regular basis to make sure that there's enough power to go around here in the, you know, energy capital of the world, Texas.
I'm afraid we may be short a few times over the summer. We came really close last summer to losing parts of the grid, or at least going into rolling blackouts. You know, thankfully, the public responded to conservation calls, and we could turn the thermostats up a bit, cut back on the AC in the afternoons, and shave 2,000-3,000 megawatts off the afternoon peak. But keep in mind, we really haven't added any new generation. You know, we've added a lot of solar, no question that helps. But the solar ramps off as the sun goes down. Mm-hmm. We don't quite have enough batteries right now. Our natural gas-fired power plants average 30 years in age. The coal-fired power plants average 50 years in age, and they break, and we're not building new ones. Mm-hmm. In fact, two of the natural gas power plants were just purchased over the last 8 weeks at prices less than 50 cents on the dollar of building new ones, simply because, you know, looking ahead, the grid will not reward them for being there.
Mm-hmm. So wait, they were bought at bargain basement prices recently. And what becomes of those now?
Well, the ones that CPS in San Antonio bought, those will be replacing some old coal plant that CPS has. So CPS is going to clean up its emissions and get a more modern facility in return, mm-hmm. and essentially trading some dollars out.
Mm-hmm.
We're retiring these old plants, and so that's taking capacity away from the Texas market. We've had about 1 million people move into Texas since 2021.
Wow.
That's more and more demand. We're seeing a lot more growth in demand than anyone had anticipated. This past week, we had a power peak well over 71,000 megawatts, and that was a peak just a few years ago for a hot summer day.
Hmm.
So we are transitioning more toward the renewable fuel, the wind and solar farms, but we're not doing it fast enough. Hmm. We don't have enough batteries. And the legislature has been extremely slow to act in terms of giving anybody with a natural gas fired power plant a reason to come onto the grid.
Mm-hmm. Now, the last time we had a legislative session, they tried to put some things in place to quote unquote encourage the construction of new gas plants here. Did that fall short of what was needed, though?
It's totally inadequate.
Okay.
That $10 billion off to the side is kind of like pushing on a string. Even if you give me free money, if I can't make a return on it, doesn't matter whether I pay you back or not. I can't pay back the equity I have to have.
And Ed, if I were to give you something like that and you were to operate a gas plant, why can't you make your money back at this point?
Well, because of the pricing that predominates across the grid during the day. So Texas generally operates an electricity-only market.
Mm-hmm.
So
I only pay you if I'm the state, you only get paid here in this state if you're actually generating electricity that's being taken up.
Exactly. Apart from this wrinkle that ERCOT put in place last year that gave us this massive overcharge without giving us anything.
Yeah.
So if we, for example, let's say we had 15 power plants mm-hmm. between us. And we know that today is going to be a really hot day.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say, Jason, we need all 15. Let's power up. And you would look at me and say, Ed, if we keep 5 of these offline, then we know ERCOT's going to be pushed into a squeeze. And the average price in this grid will go from $50 a megawatt hour to $5,000 a megawatt hour. And the 10 plants we have online are going to make a killing. Why don't you sit down and have a beer and not worry about the rest
have
of
another
the day.
Shiner. Yeah.
There we are.
So, there are people who would think that, that's hyperbole, that no, there's no way that they're sitting on plants and keeping them idle and all of that. Is that actually happening?
Well, they certainly have some plausible deniability. It's, Jason, my plant's so old. I mean, gosh, it broke. And if we look at just data and comparative data, it doesn't really... Texas has more unplanned outages on really hot days or really cold days than other grids around the nation.
Hmm.
And so for most
and
of
for
last
the layperson
summer,
out right. there, unplanned outages are outages that, usually if you're going to take a big power plant offline to do some, required maintenance on them, as you mentioned, they get old. You let the grid know, like, hey, we're going to have to pull this one offline for a while. It needs a new this and a new that, and we've got to spruce up this. That's a planned outage. Unplanned is when it's like, surprise, this one's not in the grid today. We can't help you out and generate electricity. And so what you're saying is we're seeing, if you look across different grids around the country, and of course, Texas is notorious for having its own grid, and it's managed by ERCOT, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, which you've been talking about here. So you're saying, though, when you compare across these different grids, it's odd that you see this anomaly where there's more unplanned outage here than in other places.
Exactly. So, for example, PJM, Pennsylvania, Jersey, Maryland, a grid that stretches from the Atlantic seaboard all the way to Chicago, in fact. Much larger grid than Texas. Same profile in terms of aging plants, but less than half the unplanned outages on really, really bad days that we see in Texas. Mm. So there's a gaming aspect here. There are more than 1,000 generators on the ERCOT network, the grid. And if 5 or 6 of them go offline at any time, mm-hmm. that puts a strain on the rest of the grid to fill in behind them. And that can govern the price at a time when we have really not enough units to come on board. Now, during the better part of the day, for example, today it's overcast.
Yeah.
We're not going to get a lot of solar, but we're not going to get a lot of demand either.
Right.
And so that works out nicely. Probably getting good wind. Wind and solar, of course, don't have a fuel cost.
Mm-hmm.
And they are advantaged. Not only do they have a federal production tax credit, they get some tremendous state and local tax credit benefits as well. Mm-hmm. And so they can underbid natural gas, even natural gas pricing at less than $2 per 1,000 cubic feet.
Right.
They can come right in underneath them. And so if you and I had a gas-fired power plant, we wouldn't be able to bid in and make any money on it.
I see. Because you've got competition out there that can do it so much more cheaply.
And ERCOT will take that power first. And then if we get to an inflection point where suddenly it appears that we have much more demand than we have supply,
yeah.
or getting close to that, ERCOT's goofy linear programming, computer-driven algorithm, mm-hmm. And ERCOT management will throw the price up to $5,000 a megawatt hour. Now, for the consumer, that's $5 a kilowatt hour.
So in other words, though, as a generator, at that point, you're making good money.
Absolutely.
Now, the generators would push back on this notion that there's a game that's being played. But as far as you see it, having done this and seen this for a long time across multiple grids, you see a game definitely being played.
We teach this game. I have students who win this game. And so, yeah.
What do you mean when you say that?
Well, no, we teach the game. When you push the grid into a situation where there's a marginal supplier or someone with market power, the independent market monitor for ERCOT will analyze the market across the entire year and then tell us, you know, how much of that year somebody controlled the marginal kilowatt hour going in and could or did exercise market power. So if we're short just by a bit, we can drive that price up a huge amount.
Man. So students who study energy, they learn this. They see this.
Absolutely.
I mean, these are the economics of it.
That's right. And it's not just in electricity markets, in natural gas markets, as we've seen in Texas, as we see with the ongoing litigation down in Houston, mm-hmm. on gas pricing, gas price manipulation during that winter storm in February of 2021.
Right.
You know, the state of Kansas has sued gas suppliers. State of Arkansas has sued.
And things definitely went haywire in February of 2021 when we had those roller. They weren't rolling blackouts. They were blackouts that stayed in place and made a lot of people suffer.
Exactly. Hundreds died.
Yeah.
The state lost anywhere from $100 billion to $200 billion, depending upon, you know, Ray Perryman estimated $200 billion.
It's something you definitely would want to avoid happening ever again, and yet here we are.
We're leaving El Nino, going to La Nina.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a warm, muggy summer, dry summer for Texas. But again, we just haven't built enough plants to meet the demand. Why would you and I build new power plants just to keep the price down when we can profit just from the ones that we already have on the grid? Mm-hmm. And of course, as the grid transitions to renewable, my new natural gas plant, which might not reach the grid for, you know, 2 years if I already have an interconnect, or 4 years if it's a greenfield, mm-hmm. the market's going to be different. There's going to be a lot more wind, a lot more solar, a lot more batteries, and I know that power plant's going to be used less and less and less frequently going forward.
There are people who would say, oh, come on, Professor Herz, you're just being a cynic there. But if you think about it, when was the last time a gas plant was built here in Texas?
We built a few recently. Famously, Panda Power built a couple of gas-powered power plants, and then they filed suit against ERCOT because they couldn't make any money with them.
And competitors see that.
Yeah, competitors see that. Everybody sees that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are seeing some new natural gas power plants being built inside the fence, behind the meter for the petrochemical companies and refineries along the Gulf.
So they end up
having their own power plants.
Okay.
They have to.
To run their operations.
Exactly. Dow Chemical has announced that they're going to bring in 4 small modular reactors into their Seadrift, Texas facility. Now, this is not a new technology per se. We've been putting small reactors into nuclear submarines and aircraft carriers. So the technology is pretty well known. Obviously, it'll be a little different because it's a commercial operation.
So why are they doing that? They're building their own power plants, essentially. Are they doing that because they don't feel like they can depend on the grid, or are they doing that because it's more economically feasible?
Well, if you lose power to one of these chemical plants, you can be in a bind for months. One of the plastics plants in Mont Belvieu, Texas, lost power during the winter storm in 21, and it was offline for 15 months. That's a huge hit to the owner. And Dow understands this problem, and so they may arbitrage a bit by selling some excess electricity from time to time back to ERCOT.
Yeah.
But they want to make sure they have reliable power, reliable heat for the process. And of course,
so
it's a cleaner approach.
So they're building their own power plants so that they don't have to rely on a grid.
Well, and how many of the viewers, listeners, have backup generators at home or putting solar panels on their homes with batteries?
Yeah.
That's what it's come down to. China's great leap forward was power plants and backyards and smelters and this decentralized manufacturing and industrial work, and the legislature's kind of forced us into that.
I want to ask you about the price of electricity, because that's where most people, I think, get caught up on this, because you notice what your electric bill looks like. I just checked prices the other day. I've been spot checking for several years now with just one zip code and in the center of Dallas, just for comparison purposes. So it's not scientific, but it gives you an idea. And I just checked yesterday and it was higher than what I have seen for the past couple of years, which is odd, because if I look at the price of natural gas is about a fourth of what it cost back in 2022. Recently, it was at a sixth of the cost of what it was in 2022. We rely on natural gas to power most of the power we get here in this state. If natural gas is so cheap right now, relatively speaking, why is electricity still so expensive?
It's because of the construction of the ERCOT market. It is a construction that rewards shortfalls. It encourages shortfalls. It encourages market manipulation. Nothing's more interesting than looking at gridstatus.io, which is a website that covers the grids real time, and seeing that Texas would be powered more by natural gas, and then compare that with California, whose primary power might be natural gas, at a price that's a lot less than ours in the wholesale market. The for 2023, the Energy Information Agency tracked the wholesale prices, and the data don't lie. The price in Texas actually went up. The price in all the other grids went down, and actually went down below the Texas price. And the price volatility in Texas was the highest across any of the grids, ranging from roughly zero, which happens on a very, very calm, comfortable, wonderful night, and wind takes over, and the price gets bid down to zero, to $5,000 a megawatt hour, which is the top end price allowed by ERCOT. Now keep in mind, Texas is not a deregulated grid; it's just regulated differently.
So this is this all goes back to what you were talking about then, of there's a manipulation in play here. It's the way that the market is designed here, that even when gas prices are tremendously lower than what they were, we're actually seeing higher electric rates.
That's it, because it cost the retail electricity provider a lot of money to lock in a rate for you for the next year or the next 2 years. They have to contract with a generator to provide that power. Mm-hmm. Well, the only way you can actually contract with a generator that has that power is if they can stay on all the time. And so one of the things that we found in this litigation is that everybody's pointing the finger this way and that way. You know, in the southeastern United States, if the power goes out, I call Georgia Power, I call Alabama Power, and I've got one person to complain to. Mm. I can go to the state legislature and say, hey, Alabama Power is screwing me over in Mobile.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do that in Dallas or Houston. You know, here in Dallas, Oncor is like, look, not my fault, it's ERCOT's fault, or you know, whoever the retail electricity provider is. You know, keep in mind, Gritty wasn't the one that was the most egregious. They actually told the consumers they were going into the wholesale market. They'd be exposed to that.
Yeah.
The retail electricity providers that took your customers' money and played the market with it and came up short, those are the ones we're bailing out now with the billions of dollars of securitized payments over the next 20 to 30 years.
And this is going back to that February 2021 storm when so much money was made by some and lost by others, and that's still being settled out. I want to ask you about you're on your way to Colorado. Tell me about Colorado is not happy with us either.
No, the week after the winter storm, the Colorado Public Utility Commission calls up and says, hey, we've got this extra $1 billion that came flowing up on natural gas pricing. We didn't lose natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
We price off of some of the hubs in Texas, but my God, guys, what did you do to us?
So they paid $1 billion more in natural gas prices than what they were expecting.
Exactly. And
because of what happened here.
Plenty of natural gas facilities in Colorado. The same in Oklahoma. And in many of these states, the activity in the Texas natural gas market is subject to a lot of litigation right now.
So it was our problem because our grid is separated from everybody else's. It was our problem, but it spread to other places in some ways. And people are still not happy about this. They still want this to shake out and be addressed.
It's a network. And if you think of this as a lock and dams and mm-hmm. water seeking its own level through the network. If I can put a bottleneck at one node, or if I can hold back natural gas or electricity at one node, I can drive the price up dramatically.
Yeah. So other states are definitely affected by what happens here in Texas. You'll probably hear about this. I guess you hear about this when you go to Colorado and, you know, here you are, the energy fellow from Houston, you know, the University of Houston. Do they ask you, like, what's going on? Explain this to us.
They're going to be talking that way for sure. And so one of the challenges is, again, with the network economy,
yeah,
regulatory oversight is kind of clumsy.
Yeah.
And it's often done in arrears. And regulators are, you know, always answering rather than leading. Mm-hmm. Regulators can't make investments. The Public Utility Commission of Texas cannot dictate investment. ERCOT, which is the grid manager, and also the market maker, cannot dictate investment.
They can't say, hey, company, go over there and build some plants. We need them. Yeah. Last summer, you know, and in a winter, too, we go through this where we're, you know, it seems like over and over again, it's another day where we got to watch the grid. We got to see those two lines. Does supply and demand, do they cross each other? And we get into one of these terrible situations. You know, we can only imagine as we go into this summer that we're going to, you know, have to keep seeing that for a number of days. It seems like, though, every time that happened last summer, you know, the day ended, you know, it was sort of anticlimactic, like, oh, yeah, there was enough there. Everything worked out fine. People pulled back. They, you know, raised the thermostat, et cetera. Do you think that the day is coming, though, that's not going to be possible, that the demand is it's not going to come down enough and we're not going to have enough supply?
It's really easy to see how that could happen. You know, keep in mind, it's all run by people. Mm-hmm. And some of the massive grid failures we've had recently across the nation, a tree limb fell in Cleveland and shorted out the entire eastern seaboard. Some poor operator in Arizona pushed the wrong button, took down Arizona and all of Southern California. You know, just a misstep of switching one or two power plants around ERCOT could cause a significant problem.
Because it's that close.
It's that close.
So all it takes is one little error that on any regular day would easily be absorbed and it wouldn't be a problem. Nobody would ever know about it. That error, when you're that close on supply and demand, can be the difference between normal conditions and rolling blackouts.
Exactly. And again, we're dealing with physical infrastructure that's old.
Yeah.
A coal plant blew up 2 years ago down in Fort Bend County. That could be an issue.
I want to ask you before I let you go about crypto. Because, you know, that's talked about a lot.
Yeah, well, first of all, the crypto miners absorb and suck down lots of power.
It's a lot of consumption. Well, and not just here in Texas, but this is nationally.
But mainly in Texas.
Yeah.
The crypto miners are using more power on a daily basis than the city of Austin.
Wow.
And
So crypto miners who are, where the computers are working to create these sort of locks, for these crypto coins, they're using more power in Texas than the city of Austin on any given day.
Exactly.
I wanted to show you this map. This comes from the Energy Information Administration, and it's basically U.S. cryptocurrency mining operations, and it shows all these bubbles, and Texas has the most of these big bubbles in it, so that's the power that's being consumed in Texas. For cryptocurrency,
it's not just the power; it's also the economic terms. As Bloomberg pointed out in reviewing some of the published financial statements of the publicly traded companies, they buy wholesale power at 2.5 cents per kilowatt hour, or $25 a megawatt hour, and then they can sell it back to ERCOT at a huge premium, hundreds, thousands of dollars, when the grid's in a tight situation.
They make good money off that in some cases.
In fact, Riot Blockchain made $31 million in 1 month last summer.
Because there's deals that ERCOT has with some of these big consumers where ERCOT says, hey, use the power that you need, but on really tight days, we're going to ask for that power back. And so basically, we'll buy it back from you, but they're buying back at a premium.
Exactly. And so there's some real issues here that I just find professionally and personally offensive.
I want to ask you this too. I saw some headlines recently that artificial intelligence, AI, might help us, because the computers can kind of think of some solutions here to, keep us from running out of power, help us to regulate this more efficiently. It is a double-edged sword though, because CNBC put this out. It said AI data centers alone are expected to add 323 terawatt hours of electricity demand in the U.S. by 2030. I don't know how much a terawatt is, but that sounds like a lot when you start talking about 323 terawatt hours. And it says the forecast power demand from AI alone is 7 times greater than New York City's current annual electricity consumption. Because these computers are phenomenal, the things that they can do, but they require a lot of juice.
Your smartphone's listening to you all the time. The smart TVs around here are catching what we're talking about. Just wait for the ads to show up after we go off. That's getting routed back to a central processing center. Siri is not self-contained in an iPhone.
Yeah.
Alexa is hubbed into a main center for Amazon. That's where all that processing goes. And
it requires electricity.
And
a lot of it.
To know that you want a blue shirt versus a pink shirt, that's a lot of processing to keep track of your own individual preferences. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about this. They will know you better than your spouse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can only wish. Hey, what do I need to get for an anniversary?
Right, just give me the answers, yeah.
And
so AI might help us to manage our electricity consumption,
but it's
also going to be using a lot of electricity.
We need demand. We haven't built enough generators. And until we start building the generators, we being society.
Mm-hmm.
If Amazon wants to quadruple what Alexa can do for us at home,
right,
they're going to have to build some generators inside the fence of their plants, just like Exxon, Shell, Chevron, Philips are going to have to build generators inside the fences to maintain
because
reliable
grids can't
power.
Keep up with that.
Right. You know, the Texas grid changed more than 20 years ago from a place where utility companies would come in and talk to the Public Utility Commission and say, hey, we see Dallas growing. We're going to need to build some new plants here. This is a 3 to 5 year project.
Yeah.
We need to get started.
So it sounds like in the next few years, because I mean, you see these data centers, a lot of these huge data centers, these computer centers are popping up in Texas as well. And they pop up fast and so quickly. You know, you mentioned it used to be 3 to 5 years. Yeah, we'll see if we can add some power to deal with this big development that's coming. These things are popping up in a year and popping onto the grid, and the grid can't handle that.
It's really difficult to keep up. And keep in mind, the regulators were charged by the legislature with helping encourage business and business development. But, you know, no one has the tools to require investment, to actually make the investment, to go out and do it.
My last question before I let you go here is oil and gas. Just because you're the energy fellow, you're keeping up with all different kinds here. The price of gasoline, of course, hugely impactful, as is the price of oil in a presidential election year. We've seen some fluctuations recently. What do you see in the months between now and November, and does that affect the outcome of this election? Because I think the latest reading on inflation looked a little bit better, but it was gasoline prices that was one of the things responsible for kind of keeping it stubbornly higher than where the Fed would like to see it.
Right, so gasoline prices are up a little bit because we've gone into the summer months, and that requires a summer blend, which is more expensive than the winter blend.
Yeah.
Second, the cuts from OPEC Plus seem to be holding. Russia's production is absolutely down. You know, they're obviously we're boycotting buying Russian fuel and Russian oil. But because the Western oil service companies have left Russia, finally with Schlumberger leaving last year, they don't have the technical expertise to keep that production up, and they're having to use a lot more of it to prosecute the war. Now, Texas is doing its part to produce more and more oil, but a lot of the Texas oil, especially out of the Permian, the light sweet oil, is being exported because it doesn't match up well with our refineries.
Yeah.
We import 4 to 6 million barrels of oil a day to match up with our refineries. We're very dependent upon the global market.
Yeah, so, and we don't hear that much anymore. We hear that, hey, we're producing so much oil, we're actually an exporter. You don't hear that, well, we're still importing quite a bit because our refineries need the other kind of oil.
Exactly. I spoke with a couple of ex-congressmen last week in the offshore technology conference in Houston. Well, we're energy independent. And it's like, guys, if you're mistaken, you bought into a myth. And because we don't have any barriers to entry or exit for our oil anymore, what the price is in the Persian Gulf gets reflected back to the Permian or North Dakota.
So do we see a change in price of gas, price of oil between now and November? Do you think this has an impact?
I think it depends on whether or not OPEC Plus wants to see President Biden reelected, or they want to try their hand with Trump again.
Ed Herz, the energy fellow from the University of Houston, thanks so much for kind of taking us around the world and giving us the deep dive, but the understandable dive into electricity, oil, gas, natural gas. It really is eye-opening, and it affects all of us, and it's all so interconnected, but we don't sit and think about it,
No, these reminders from ERCOT every week now are reminders that the Texas legislature hasn't done its job.
Want to put out the call, though, to you also to connect with us on email if, you're hearing something you like, don't like, or if you would like to explore a topic or know of something that you're like, God, why haven't they done this yet? This is such a great idea. Email us. We are at yolitics@wfaa.com. yolitics@wfaa.com. Thanks, as always, for listening and for watching, and we'll do it all again next week.
Click subscribe and get Yolitics every week. Eolitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.